Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
This is the Financial Exchange with Barry Armstrong and Chuck Zada. Your exclusive look at business and financial news affecting your day, your city, your world. Stay informed and up to date about economic and market trends. Plus, get breaking business news every day. The Financial Exchange proudly supports the Disabled American Veterans Department of Massachusetts. Registration is now open for this year's DAV 5K on Saturday, November 6th. Go to financialexchangeshow.com/DAV for details. And now, it's time for The Financial Exchange with Barry Armstrong and Chuck Zada.
Those of you who lived through the banking crisis of 2008 and remember it, well, you probably know that construction of new houses during the past 20 years fell 5.5 million units short of long-term historical levels, that according to the National Association of Realtors. And good morning, by the way. It's Barry and Chuck. The thing that I gleaned from this report, Chuck, was that after 2008, construction of new homes came to almost a halt. You know, it went, I think it was under 500,000 units a year after 2008. And it stayed at a very low level for many years. And now we're paying the price for that with excessively high housing prices.
Let's go back to 1960, a year I know you're quite familiar with.
Yes.
Yeah, you are quite familiar with that year. Yeah, exactly. There you go. Okay, fantastic. I said that, and then I thought about it and said, okay, now we're getting somewhere.
At least you didn't say 1940, right?
No. Like 1960. There were about 1.6 million homes constructed in the United States during that time.
Okay.
The population of the United States in 1960. Any guesses?
1960, I'm going to say not quite 200 million. 150, 200 million.
180, right in the middle of that range. Very good. Outstanding. Today, there's 328 million people.
Yep.
And today, despite all of the talk about, wow, we're building homes at such a rapid rate, we're building around 1.6 million homes a year right now, even with the acceleration that we've seen coming out of the financial crisis.
Yeah, let's go to the years. I'd love to see the numbers for 8, 9, 10, and 11.
2009, 558,000.
Yeah.
2010, 558,000.
Yep.
2011, we finally got up to around 650,000. 2012, 750,000. We chronically underbuilt for a decade. And granted, that comes off of the speculative excess that we saw in the early 2000s, where we had, you know, too many homes being built for people who didn't need them. But there are a couple different issues that you run into here. When we talk about, you know, the U.S. housing market needing 5.5 million more units, that's as of today without the population growing.
Is that a legit number? Like when I read
that. I think that's low.
Well, you know, it's like the dentist telling you you need to brush your teeth. The National Association of Realtors, right? What are they in the business of?
They're in the business selling homes,
right?
But there's no homes to sell.
There is a darn well. Didn't inventories pick up recently?
Yes, we're now at about 350,000 homes for sale, compared to about 850,000 in a normal year.
I think I read that as of June 1st, inventory picked up 20%.
Yeah,
but
think
that's not
Tucker,
enough.
No, but
no, it's not even close.
No, but I think to Tucker's point is maybe we hit the bottom in those inventory levels.
Oh, we did.
And now I think, you know, June 1st, maybe people are thinking, okay, I'm fully vaccinated. The people walking through, traipsing through my house to looking to buy it, they're going to be fully vaccinated. So I'm comfortable listing it.
I don't think we're getting back to normal inventories for 2 to 3 years.
Damn it.
Well, I think it's 2023, maybe 2024 when we get back to normal inventory levels. But here's why I do think that this is an issue here. So you're building, again, for years. Again, we never even got above a million homes constructed mm-hmm. per year until 2014. It took us 5 years, and even then we're still running at, what, 60% of 1960 levels?
Yeah.
That's just not where you want to be. So I think if you look at what's out there, there are a few different problems. The first is, when you have a decade of chronic underbuilding,
mm-hmm.
anytime that you start to see any demand pickup, all of your supply chains have atrophied. They're right. not built.
That's exactly right. This
is why you can't spool up lumber production quickly enough, is because any sawmills that were coming out of the recession in 2009, they looked at the landscape and said, man, we tried to stick it out for 5 or 6 years. Finally, we just closed. They're not there anymore. They don't exist in a lot of cases. So your supply chains atrophied. Your workers with skills in those industries also, their skills atrophied, or they left and did something else.
Well, sure, because these are guys, you know, if you're a skilled electrician, you can find something else to do.
Yep. And then you compound this with the fact that just about every market that has had high demand over the last decade, not necessarily the ones that are seeing it now,
mm-hmm.
but the ones that have had high demand over the last decade, there has been a profound NIMBYism, not in my backyard, sentiment running through them where, hey, our town wants to go from having 8,000 units, we want to build 2,000 new units over the next 6 years. And you go to one of those town meetings, no, it's going to bring in too much traffic, too much congestion. Fine, we're going to raise your property taxes. Then no, you can't do... It's just this vicious cycle where we underbuild and then we say, no, you can't build here. And next thing you know, we wonder why our property taxes are going up to try to pay for services that constituents still want.
Yeah.
40B.
40B? Isn't that the...
Is that what it is?
Yeah, that's what the builders can use to build in the towns that don't want... Like the town you live in,
yeah.
If somebody came in and said they wanted to put in a 200-home subdivision,
yeah.
The town would vote it down. And then the builders say, well, we're going to use federal law and we're going to make some of it affordable housing.
I know there's something out there. I can't remember the specifics
40B.
Of it. Yeah. 40B. But I do think that we've underbuilt for years. Now, do we need 5.5 million? I'll make the case that we need more, especially around the cities that have had high demand. The reason why you've had ridiculous prices in places like take San Francisco as an example.
Yep.
Local zoning ordinances in San Francisco, you can't build anything of any meaningful size because everyone says, no, we want to keep the quaint charm of San Francisco.
Yep.
And that's why you have a one-bedroom house going for $1.8 million.
Yeah.
It's supply and demand. So I think the bigger issue than the overall number of homes is where we've been building them.
Mm-hmm.
Developers buy up big tracts of land in Arizona and Florida and so on and so forth because it's undeveloped land. They can get it cheap, and they throw 5,000 units in there over a 10-year period.
Mm-hmm.
You try to put 5,000 units in Metro Boston, you can't even do it. You're looking at it, you say, okay, I'll get 10 units in Newton.
Right.
I'll get 20 in Dorchester. I'll get 200,
And a lot of what you're getting, Chuck, is just teardowns of old homes that people were living in.
Yeah.
Right. Some towns are getting as many as 100 teardowns a year.
Yeah.
Where they buy a house that was built in the 50s or 60s or 70s. They rip it down and they put up a McMansion.
And I'm not someone.
So you're not really increasing the stock.
No. And I'm not someone who sits there and says, I want high rises everywhere in order to, get more units in. I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is if you have a parcel of land that's zoned for single family use, just by zoning that for a duplex, you double the amount of housing that you can have on that parcel. Like those are the kinds of things where you talk about the usage of duplexes, triplexes, things like that. You don't have to
be building. But you also understand why the next door neighbor doesn't want a duplex going in there.
I think it's incredibly short-sighted of them.
Why? If my neighbor's lot was empty, I wouldn't want to put it in a duplex. I live in a single family home neighborhood. I like it.
What's the problem with a duplex going in across the street?
Too much noise.
What noise?
Extra cars, extra kids.
There's
extra
too
dogs.
Much malarkey.
Too much malarkey.
And this is the problem.
I am the problem.
I'm okay.
But you know what? I'm okay with being the problem. It's density. I bought the house in my neighborhood because I like the fact that it's not too built up. I don't want to mm-hmm. have a two family or a three family right next to me. Does that make me a mean guy?
It doesn't make you a mean guy. It just means that you can't complain when your property taxes go up then.
Right. Well,
you can't have it both ways.
Right.
Right.
You get one or the other. You either get more density or higher property taxes.
Seems like we get both. Doesn't it seem like they always say that, oh, you let us build and keep the property taxes down. But when you build, you know, you're putting more kids in the school system, right?
Yep.
And that just adds pressure on the school
system. I don't know. You keep telling us to have kids, and now you're telling us that that's the problem. They're raising your property taxes. They're doing this, they're doing that. Ultimately, I think that when we look at the situation, I come back to, we've chronically underbuilt for a decade, and you don't have people to ramp up building quickly enough, and we don't have enough inventory to begin with.
Have housing prices gotten too high? Are we ahead of our skis?
No.
I don't think so.
I'm pretty convinced that you're going to see at least a couple more years of real strong housing growth.
Because you think interest rates will remain low, employment. You know, it's interesting now. For the first time, and I think this is a generational issue, which is, employees, for the first time in as long as I can remember, have the upper hand.
Probably since, I mean, if we're really trying to look at it, it's probably to this level of power that they
I've
have
never
now.
I've never seen it in my
it's
life.
It's probably the 1960s.
Why? You think even then it was this
yeah.
strong?
1960s, yeah. you had real strong unions back then. You had, yeah. you know, it was a lot of big companies with union representation, corporate pensions and things like that. Yeah. I think you got to go back to there because 1970s, certainly not the case. Yeah. You know, unemployment was high for the whole decade just about. Mm. 1980s, kind of a transitionary period, but you had an awful lot of union busting. You had an awful lot of, companies moving away from pensions and healthcare obligations. 1990s, corporate raiders everywhere.
Yep.
Then you get the 2000s and it's easy money and, you know, high unemployment for much of the last two decades. You're coming off dot-com bubble financial crisis, both slow recoveries there. Mm. It's this is probably the most power that employees have had since the 1960s.
Yeah. Which is good for wages.
Good for wages. Yeah. But the question becomes, you know, do we get to the point where prices are rising faster than wages? To this point, for low-income workers, mm-hmm. they're not right now. Low-income workers are seeing 10-11% bumps in wages right now,
okay.
and prices year over year up about 6%, we
That's
said.
Good. Yeah.
So if you maintain that, great. Mm-hmm. But if prices start rising 7-8% and wages are only going up 4 or 5, that's not comfortable.
Tucker Silva, next segment is going to be we're going to be talking about vacation homes, right?
Yeah, and how vacation homes have really skyrocketed during the pandemic. The National Association of Realtors, speaking of them, has a new report out with new stats on that. So we'll be joined by the Director of Housing and Commercial Research with the National Association of Realtors.
This is your home for the latest business and financial news in New England and around the country. This is the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
Did you know that both your Social Security and your pension benefits could be taxable? Hi, this is Chuck Zotta from the Armstrong Advisory Group. Social Security benefits are taxed as ordinary income if your income is above a certain level, but your pension benefits may also have tax consequences based on certain circumstances. Understanding how and why these issues can occur can have a significant effect on your retirement income strategy. 14 states don't tax pensions at all, including one New England state, but there are 36 others that do. If you're thinking about moving to that retirement home on the beach, then this is an issue you need to understand. Call us today at 800-393-4001 and we'll walk you through this topic and others in our new free guide called Building an Income Distribution Strategy. That's 800-393-4001 or download it right now at armstrongadvisory.com.
Securities offered through Securities America Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC, and advisory services offered through Securities America Advisors Incorporated. Securities America and its representatives do not provide tax advice. Therefore, it is important to coordinate with your tax advisor regarding your specific situation. Charles Zotta, representative. Armstrong Advisory Group and the Securities America companies are unaffiliated.
The Financial Exchange is live on Facebook, so make sure to like our page and watch the guys break down the latest on the markets every day beginning at 10 on the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
This segment of the Financial Exchange is brought to you in part by Stony Brook Water. If you want the purest, freshest water for your home or office, call Stony Brook today and get one of their new Ion coolers, 978-381-1476, and sign up for a free trial today. That's 978-381-1476, or visit them online at stonybrookwater.com/ trial.
Trivia is brought to you by Southern Airways Express. Flights to Nantucket are now available with a brand new schedule from Hanscom Field. Take the easy route to Nantucket. Fly Southern Airways Express from Norwood, Providence, New Bedford, and now Hanscom Field off of Route 128. Fast flights, low fares, book today at iFlySouthern.com. This week in the year 1975, I remember it was like it was yesterday, Jaws was released in theaters and went on to become one of the most important films in cinema history. Jaws will be the topic of today's trivia question. What name did director Steven Spielberg give to the shark in the movie Jaws? Good question. If you know the answer, text your name and the keyword iFly to 63566. That's your first and last name and the keyword iFly to 63566. The ninth correct answer will win a $50 gas card and be automatically registered to win a pair of round trip tickets to Nantucket on Southern Airways Express. We'll give those tickets away during Friday's program. What name did director Steven Spielberg give to the shark in the movie Jaws? Let's talk technology. Let's talk Lena Khan, one of the few cabinet appointments that on behalf of President Biden that actually got some Republican support, a lot of Republican support.
Yeah, Lena Khan, who is had previously been a Columbia University law professor, was confirmed on a 69-28 vote yesterday to become a member of the FTC. Biden then immediately designated her as the FTC chairwoman, which means that she has the ability really to direct the role of the agency and the specific enforcement actions they want to try to undertake. Khan, first and foremost, she's 32 years old. So she is, you know, young and ready to go. And this is someone who I've followed actually for about 4 or 5 years at this point in terms of her career and, you know, just kind of keeping track of what she's been doing, just because from really her mid-20s, she has been publishing some outspoken research on antitrust in the tech sector, specifically with regards to Amazon. And if anyone's been listening to our show for a while, you know that I think that one of the major failings of the U.S. government in the last 5 years, maybe 10 years even, is how they have let big tech run roughshod over any regulations that have been on the books. And I think the fact that Khan is A, you know, the top choice that's now confirmed, and B, also going to be heading up the agency, I think is a fantastic sign that some of these big tech companies might be getting some scrutiny and might be getting some new legislation coming through Congress at the direction of Khan to build some enforcement actions over the next few years here.
Good. Good.
So that's what I think is going to be going on there. As promised, we're all set now, Tucker?
Yep.
Okay, perfect. As promised, we're now joined by Gay Koraratan from the National Association of Realtors. Gay, we appreciate you joining us today. Let's talk a little bit about the sale of vacation homes in the United States. How much are they booming this year?
Yes. Well, first of all, thank you for having me, and good morning to everyone. They're booming. Sales were up this year from January to April by 57%, whereas existing home sales on broad level are just up 20%. So that's twice the pace. And historically, vacation home sales just accounted for about 5% of sales. They're now at around 8% as of April. And really, there's been a pickup in demand, and I think we can attribute that to the desire for people to enjoy their time in the rural areas, suburban areas, with, you know, the pandemic not enabling them to enjoy, you know, recreation in the urban-based centers.
Gay, do you think that these properties are going to be used for remote work as well as vacation, given what we're seeing in terms of some employers allowing remote work to continue after the pandemic ends?
Yeah, certainly. We did see that, you know, nothing else happened, right, from 2019. It was 2020, 2021. And we certainly those vacation homes could be used for working from home, and with also children being schooled there. I think moving forward, allowing people or enabling them to go in a hybrid will just give them more time to enjoy that vacation home. So I think that's a factor.
Gabe, one of the questions that I have on this is I wonder how many of the people buying these second homes are previously have no experience owning multiple properties. And one of the things I worry about is once they realize how much work it is to maintain a couple properties, do we see a bunch of vacation homes for sale 5-6 years from now when people decide they don't want the hassle anymore?
Well, you know, I think we didn't really, the data didn't look into how many homes a buyer would own. I would think you probably would own one close, a little bit closer to where you are. No, but you can't, if you can't maintain it, then you sell it. You know, it's a very strong market right now. I don't think that would be a problem. But I think, you know, people buy this to enjoy them. And also during the times that they don't live in them, they can also rent them out also. We know the hotel sector is hurting right now from the competition from short-term rentals. And those vacation homes that are in this areas where you have more, a more, I would say, a genuine ambience and an authentic atmosphere will do very well with vacationers who want to rent homes out there. I think you're going to have a good, strong vacation market, actually, past the pandemic.
Very good. Gay, we appreciate you joining us today. Thank you so much for the time.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires. Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Thanks. Yeah.
Bye-bye. You know, a lot of vacation homes end up becoming your retirement home. You know, people buy the place on the Cape when they're 50, and then they retire there when they turn 60.
Yeah,
seen a lot
very
of that
common
with many of our clients. The S&P is flat. Dow's down 14 points. NASDAQ is up 28 points. When we come back, we'll be talking about Apple and their healthcare initiative.
The Financial Exchange is live on Facebook, so make sure to like our page and watch the guys break down the latest on the markets every day beginning at 10 on the Financial Exchange Radio Network. If you're a new investor or an experienced one, staying on top of changes in the markets is key to not missing an opportunity for growth. We explore this and other topics in our brand new podcast called Dumb Questions for Smart Money, presented by the Financial Exchange Radio Network. Subscribe today on Apple, Spotify, and all your favorite podcast apps.
It's time to finish at the fort. Join us here at the Financial Exchange as we support the Disabled American Veterans Department of Massachusetts. And we take part in this year's DAV 5K. The race is set for Saturday, November 6th from Fort Independence at Castle Island. And registration is now open. Visit financialexchangeshow.com/DAV to sign up and learn more about how you can help our true American heroes and also beat Tucker in this race.
Steven Spielberg decided to give the name Bruce to the shark in Jaws, named after his longtime lawyer. There were three different versions of the 1.2-ton mechanical shark during the filming, all of which Spielberg referred to as Bruce.
Winner on this question is John from Colchester, Vermont, and John is taking home a $50 gas card and automatically registered to win a pair of round-trip tickets to Nantucket on Southern Airways Express. We'll give those away on Friday's show. Trivia today is brought to you by Southern Airways Express. Flights to Nantucket, they're now available with a brand new schedule from Hanscom Field. Fly Southern Airways Express from Norwood, Providence, New Bedford, and now Hanscom Field off 128. Fast flights, low fares, book today at iFlySouthern.com.
I think it's fair to say that there are major problems associated with the American healthcare system.
I think it's all fine.
You do. You've had, you know, smart people banding together to try to address the issue of healthcare in the United States. Amazon, J.P. Morgan, Apple,
Berkshire Hathaway.
Everybody. Oh, we've got the solution. Well, no, you don't. At any rate, Apple has said the greatest contribution to mankind will be health. And, you know, it may be Apple's, that may be their greatest contribution. I'm a big fan of the Apple Watch. Some of the healthcare information available on that watch is just nothing short of remarkable.
It's still just not catching on in terms of the healthcare aspect of it. And this is the key problem is, a lot of these companies, they're trying to disrupt an industry that is now $4 trillion a year in revenue. And there are a lot of entrenched interests that don't want it disrupted. There are habits that people have built up societally and culturally that are difficult to disrupt. And coming in and saying that you want to revolutionize healthcare, it's hard, man. It's just,
well,
it's,
Apple tried it, right? They had their own clinics. They had their, and it was a flop.
It's just something that is, you can come in with the best intentions, but you can see very easily how you end up just banging your head against a wall trying to break through in a business that just has very set ways that people look about it. I'll give you just an example. This is from the Wall Street Journal. Apple Chief Operating Officer Jeff Williams, who oversees the health team, urged employees to think big. He said Apple should disrupt what he called the 363 and break fix model of care in the U.S., mm-hmm. where patients may not see their doctors 363 days a year and only visit when something goes wrong. Do people have the time on average to go and see a doctor every couple months just to check in?
No. No, and you don't want to. It's not a pleasant
experience. Most of the time you don't need to, if we're being honest.
And you don't want to. It'd be like going to the dentist every 2 months. Why would you?
It's, you have to run kind of your cost-benefit analysis. Yeah. What am I going to pick up every couple months that I don't, that I don't get from, you know, every year or something like that? So this program from Apple, they were trying to offer, you know, continuous health monitoring and primary care services, and, you know, they would have device sensors and software to try to optimize when people would need to come in to see their doctor. And the problem is it didn't work, quite honestly. Yeah. And that's what it ended up being. So I think, you know, all these companies, especially, you see a lot of big companies trying to figure out, hey, how do we lower healthcare costs? None of them have come up with a good way to do it.
No.
And ultimately it's because if you look at where the bulk of healthcare costs come from, it's prescription drugs and doctors. And until you can figure out cheaper ways to do either of those, that's it. That's the whole game.
Yeah. And the prescription drug companies are the ones that wrote the last healthcare law, right?
They're writing the legislation. Then you got the American Medical Association. They want to, you know, protect their members' interests. And I don't begrudge them for wanting to do that, but I begrudge them the way that they've done it, certainly.
Yeah. Well, the results have not been great.
No, it hasn't been.
We spend more money on healthcare than anybody else, and our results are not so hot.
Now, if you want to look at, and here's another piece that I come back to, because you will get people, and this isn't wrong, you get a whole bunch of people who say, well, if you look at the advances in medical care over the last 100 years, they more than pay for themselves. And it's true, they do. But the issue isn't whether or not we have better medical care today than 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we do. The question is, when you look at the marginal benefits that are accruing on a yearly basis now, are the costs going up more than the benefits? And the answer is pretty clearly yes over the last 20 years in particular.
But it's such a burden on, you know, if you want to retire early, you know who I'm talking about, right? You're 61 and you want to retire. Boy, the cost of going out and buying health insurance, Chuck, you could be spending $2,000 a month.
Yep.
On your medical insurance.
Oh, easy.
And then if you're not retired and you're 61 years old, your employer's paying it, right? And that's, you know, a heck of a burden on employers.
There's no incentive for anyone to keep costs down. There isn't. The only incentive that's out there is, hey, you have a little bit of an administrative cost incentive on insurance plans.
Yeah.
But what's the incentive for an insurance company to keep costs down when there's no competition in the health insurance market?
Right, and they get paid based on, you know, their margins are based off what they pay.
They get paid based
like utility
on the amount of services that they bill on, basically. So if, you know, okay, patient X was going to have $100,000 worth of work done this year, but now they have $120,000. What does the health insurance company care? No, they're just going to raise premiums next year.
Right.
They don't really care. So that's the deal.
The Department of Education just approved $500 million of student debt relief for 18,000 borrowers. Who are these borrowers? Well, they were borrowers who signed up to go to school at the ITT Technical Institute.
Yeah, they're going to end up with 100% of their loans being canceled here. ITT closed in 2016. And by September of 2020, 4 years later, 48 state attorneys general and the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau ruled that they had a trust that was set up to continue collecting student loans made for, you know, services rendered by ITT. They said, no, you're not going to be able to collect those anymore. So that alone, that judgment there was $330 million in student loan forgiveness for about 35,000 former students. And then this was, you know, another group.
So is it deemed that the ITT was basically lending out the money and these kids weren't getting an education? Not a lot of them weren't kids. These are adults.
It wasn't ITT lending out the money. It was, you know, other lenders that were backed by the federal government.
Yeah.
And
introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
What it seems was happening was that ITT made up statistics about how many people were getting hired in certain roles coming out of there. And the other one that was, I think, just as egregious because it resulted in people taking on more debt was the fact that they also misled students about whether or not credits from ITT would transfer to other schools and universities, which in most cases they would not.
Right.
So then it was, oh, well, now I'm going to go here and take on additional debt. Oh, by the way, my credits don't transfer, and now I've already taken out this debt, and what do I do?
So that's why the money's being forgiven?
Yeah, basically they were making fraudulent claims.
Are there more to come on this?
Oh, yeah. There were a ton in that for-profit college space.
I got to tell you, like, if somebody was defrauded, say it's a truck driving school or a hair school or something like that,
yep,
I think that money should be forgiven.
We think that. If it's happening fraud, in finance or healthcare or,
right,
you know, law, whatever it is, if there's fraud being conducted.
And you go after the perpetrators to the best degree you can.
Yep.
But this comes back to the old idea, Chuck, that we've had in conversation we've had about underwriting these loans.
Yeah, and it's something that I came around to saying, look, you need to do this. You have to, if you want to reform the system, you don't just cancel all student debt. This is a narrow thing, so I don't want to make it sound like I'm against this. But you don't just say, hey, let's cancel all student debt, not change anything, because then we're right back here 15, right, 20 years from now.
Right.
It doesn't fix anything. So I think if you want to fix it, you start underwriting all student loans. You basically make it such that you know, schools aren't just taking, okay, we don't want student loans then, so we're just going to take a bunch of wealthy people and, you know, just become, you know, kind of the old boys club again.
Yep.
You also make it so that in order to qualify for nonprofit status, they have to take students from, you know, a variety of different tax brackets, you know, and income levels and things like that. And that's how you manage it so that you can actually get an education system that's cost effective as opposed to paying what we pay today.
Up next, we're going to be talking about why some families may opt out of the child tax credit payments that are going to start in July.
Business and financial news affecting the markets and your wallet. We've got it all straight from Wall Street, right here on the Financial Exchange Radio Network. Creating the proper estate plan not only protects your assets from the nursing home, but also helps you avoid probate and potentially eliminates estate taxes. Whether you need a life estate or an irrevocable trust, Cushing & Dolan can help educate you on the best course of action with the least amount of worry. Protecting your assets from the nursing home is one of the great challenges of elder life planning. If you've worked hard and have accumulated wealth, don't let those assets be drained by an unexpected nursing home stay. Call Cushing & Dolan. They're experts in estate planning and taxation, and their brand new guide for the month of June is now available. It's called Life Estates versus Irrevocable Trusts, and it'll help you deal with these kinds of concerns. Call their office today at 866-848-5699 and ask for your free guide. Protect your assets now to ensure a sound retirement, and don't run the risk of leaving your spouse without money. Call 866-848-5699. That's 866-848-5699. Or you can download the guide right now from their website, LegalExchangeShow.com.
Business news, financial news, and what it means to you on the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
Young families are scheduled to start receiving their child tax credit payments beginning in July. What are the parameters for those payments, Chuck? It's based on the age of your child, the number of kids you have, and you get a monthly check based, like younger kids, I think you get more money on based on, than, say, a 14-year-old.
Yeah, for children under the age of 17, it's going to be $250 a month. For kids under the age of 6, it's $300 a month.
Okay. And the logic there being that you might be paying for daycare for the under 6?
Yeah, the daycare, you know, additional help, you know, babysitting needed just to, you know, watch the kids while they're, you know, not in school before school age and stuff like that.
Right. But the IRS is setting up a way for people to say, no, don't send me the money.
Yeah, and the reason why is not because people don't want to claim the money, but the current child tax credit is not paid on a monthly basis. It's paid annually as a tax credit that can be refundable at the end of the year. So what happens is most people who basically, anyone today who claims the child tax credit, they get that applied to their refund in April or whenever it is that they file. So the reason that the IRS is allowing people to defer receiving this credit until April is if they plan their spending based on receiving a certain amount of refund, mm-hmm. they can still receive this as part of their tax refund as opposed to on a monthly basis. Now, I wouldn't do it that way for my family.
Right.
But there are some people who live in, you know, kind of live and really like the idea of that tax refund.
Well, especially if you're an independent contractor and you're filing your own taxes, yep. you know, it's tough to stay on top of those quarterly estimates. And
it is,
you know, people run into trouble. I've run into trouble on that where you just say, gee, I missed that payment. And, yep. you know, and then you got a real problem.
So it's just to give families the flexibility. So you can either, you know, still have that, you know, come out just at the end of the tax year when you file in April. Or you have the ability to receive it on a monthly basis, either that $250 or $300 per child. So, again, you do have a little bit of flexibility there. The IRS is going to be setting up a portal later in June for families to be able to choose which selection they want. But that is not up currently, even though, as we sit here today, there are only 14 days left in June. So the IRS better get cooking on this.
Yeah, they better. They better. Well, you know, people are expecting that money.
They are.
And you have to sign up in order to get any money? What, either like it?
Nope. You don't have to sign up to get any money. Okay. You have to sign up if you want to not receive it monthly and push it to next April.
I'm guessing that's going to be a small amount.
I would imagine maybe 5 to 10% of people.
You think it'd be that high?
Yeah.
Okay.
I do. There are some people who just love tax refunds.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, the government's giving me back money. No, you just paid them too much for the last
right.
year.
I know. I hate paying the government. Hey, let's talk about the Girl Scouts. They are stuck with over 15 million boxes of unsold cookies.
Please send them to the Financial Exchange.
Yes, I am happy. Do you guys have a favorite on those, by the way?
You know, I always lean the Caramel Delights.
Me too.
Yeah, those are my favorite. Are solid, yeah.
Yeah.
Chuck?
Just the shortbread ones, whatever those are.
Oh, those are pretty good.
I'm a big fan of those.
Yeah, those are kind of bland.
The mint ones. The
thin mints are good. They're a little overrated if you ask
the,
me.
What's the peanut butter ones? The tagalongs, I think.
So you have the peanut butter sandwich and the tagalongs.
Yeah, I like the tagalongs. Yep, yeah. Tagalongs are good.
What are the caramel ones called, Tucker?
Caramel Delights.
Samoas.
Samoas.
So we should probably order a couple million boxes.
At least, I would say, yeah.
What are they, $5 a box?
I believe that's what they go for, yeah. And there is a new flavor, by the way.
Oh. Do tell.
It's called Toast Yay, which is a toast-shaped cookie full of French toast flavor and flair.
Well,
they look fun.
They ordered all these cookies thinking they could sell them door to door.
They didn't realize the pandemic was going to happen last year.
Well, you know.
I'll take last year's cookies, though. I don't care.
Yeah, I'll eat them.
They probably taste the same.
Yeah, right? You know?
Trust me, we will be eating them.
Oh, yeah.
They're nowhere in the story did it say they were going to be disposing of these cookies.
No, I would. How many do you think you. Here's a real question for you. How many boxes of Girl Scout cookies could you eat in one day if you just didn't care about how you felt?
So, like, what your stomach could actually
hold. Yeah, so I'd say three. Forget your other meals, you know?
I'd say three, Tucker.
Three and a half?
I'd go five or six.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I mean, the peanut butter would just be like a lead balloon in your stomach.
Oh, I don't
care. That was never an option in our house.
What, Girl Scout cookies?
No, them getting an opportunity to eat three boxes.
Yeah.
Because damn kids ate them all.
Well, anyways, they're backed up. Yeah.
So go have some kids, everyone.
Right. Says the grandfather who, you know, kind of, I get to play with my kids when I want, you know. I'm giving them a swimming lesson today, by the way.
How does that go?
It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's awesome. I have them do this thing called the flying squirrel.
Oh, I do the flying squirrel.
It's awesome. They jump off the edge.
Yeah, you grab your feet.
Yeah.
Sounds like a cannonball.
Yeah, you grab your feet and go in head first.
That's a can opener.
No, your feet are. It's like a dive, but with your feet and arms behind you, so your head hits the water first.
Yeah. That doesn't sound pleasant.
It's fantastic.
It's a good way to teach a kid to get their face wet.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's talk about Best Buy. They're getting into new lines of work.
Yes, they are going to begin selling luggage and grills as they seek to capitalize on the reopening economy.
I've seen air conditioners for sale in Best Buy.
Oh, sure. I mean, that's been there for years.
Yeah, electronics, that makes sense. I guess I look
grills,
at...
Grills, though?
Luggage?
Luggage?
Who do you want to be? Macy's?
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like.
I'm trying to think who the shopper is for Best Buy. Like, who goes in there? You guys, like, when was the last time either of you guys were in a Best Buy?
Honestly, 2-3 years, something like that.
My dad and I went into one to buy a phone.
Why did I
had
to
go? That was like 5 years ago.
I had to go in there 3 years ago for something. Oh, no, I was just trying to buy a gift card or something, and I was popping by and didn't want to buy it online. That was the only reason why.
But you don't go to Best Buy to buy your technology?
No, all TVs. Online. All online.
Really?
Yeah.
Their company's doing pretty well.
They're doing great.
You know?
You know, it's hard to be critical of this, but again, the companies that sell stuff in all different departments, they're known as department stores, I believe.
Yeah.
And they're generally not doing very well.
Yeah.
I still think they should take a IKEA type approach and make like
mazes.
Ish, Chuck. Like you know, a kitchen area with all the electronics for your kitchen or your entertainment room or your home office. If you did that into different sections at a Best Buy, that would attract a lot more
people, I
could see
that.
I feel like.
That makes sense.
They should hire me.
Makes more sense than luggage.
Yeah, I don't get the luggage. Makes no sense.
Who goes in there trying to buy a computer and is like, oh, luggage.
You can't
I need some of that.
You can't even plug luggage in. Like, what are you selling it for?
Well, you can, but it doesn't go well. I tried.
Not going to ask why. No need to know why. Well, Best Buy getting into that new line of business. And
they're selling patio furniture. Stick to what you're good at.
Hey, if you want to have some fun this afternoon, keep an eye on the stock market between the hours of 2 and 4 o'clock. That's when all the action's going to occur. It will be volatile between 2 and 4 p.m. Right now, it's flat. NASDAQ's up 21. Dow's down 18. S&P is flat. See you tomorrow, guys.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes.
seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.